Hello.
So you were gonna ask me a question?
Asking a question. We were just talking about
the lights.
We
had an epiphany.
Yeah, here's the lights, right? So the lights. Do you get upset about the lights in your house?
I do. I'm the only person that turns out the dining room light. Everyone else likes it on. They feel as if it's the sun shining upon us.
Right. Okay. So interesting.
But
you
we don't ever sit in the dining room. So I'm always like, well, maybe we could turn that one off. They're like, but people don't like to look over there and see it all dark.
Oh, and it drives me crazy. It used to drive me crazy. And then I was listening to a podcast, and this guy was explaining, like, the properties of light and stuff. He was like, doing it in a spiritual way. He's like, have you ever remember as a kid, like, you walk around and you turn on the lights? Like, why?
I don't know.
It's because light scares away darkness. It's like a comfort. It's this thing. And, like, all of a sudden, I had this, like, paradigm shift. Now the lights in the house don't bug me.
Okay.
Because I know when my wife is alone.
Yeah, the space heaters.
Oh, my wife's going through a thing right now where, you know, it gets hot and cold by the minute. And so she's like, our house is freezing. It's like 64 degrees.
Oh, wow. What?
It is cold. Jeez. Okay. It is cold. Like, but I kind of okay with it because remember when the gas prices
went up? You're saving money, man.
You're saving boatloads. Especially this time of year because it's not electricity that kills me. It's the gas prices. Remember the gas prices went up, was it last year? And like everybody got hit by that massive gas.
Yeah. I was about to joke about a quirk about my wife as it relates to the use of electricity, but it occurred to me that she, on the way out of the house, said, say something nice about me on the podcast. Because today is our 28th anniversary.
Today?
Today.
Congrats. Why are you here?
Oh, we don't know. We don't ever celebrate our anniversary.
Really?
Yeah, because we always say we want to, but we've gone to like 11 parties and open presents for everything under the sun, and we're always just like, ah.
You're done.
And we just kiss each other. Good morning. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
And then for a while, we celebrated the half anniversary, but then it's just like, I don't know.
Dude, I'm under pressure this year because it's my wife's 50th birthday in June, and it's our 25th anniversary in March. She's expecting something big.
Dude, you got to go to Europe.
I know. You keep telling me. Italy. I don't know what to do.
Oh,
I'm scared of those Europeans.
I know. And you got to go. Okay, do you have a passport?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to talk after this, and you're going to go to Italy, and it's going to be amazing. that's what you got to do. Okay, anyway, so 28th anniversary, Rachel's great, and she can use all the electricity she wants. She has earned it.
But do you see the paradigm shift? I was like, wait, it's a source of safety.
If you think about it, it's a virtue to turn on all the lights. Somewhere like an environmentalist listening is dying inside.
Yeah. When we first moved into the house, I changed a bunch of the ones that I knew would never get turned off to motion sensor ones.
Yeah.
And I thought I was a genius until I go into that one and it turns off on you when you're not moving.
Not
enough.
Great. Yeah.
I hate those things.
There's a couple of offices that work like that where I'm like typing on my computer and I'm just out of the sensor's way for some reason, wherever I'm choosing to sit. And then it goes,
you know what?
And the light goes off and it's weirdly demoralizing. To be like, it's like the machine doesn't even recognize me as the person that I am. It's weirdly demoralizing. Then you got to get up and wave your arms.
This gonna be
like you work for the machine now. You know what I mean?
This is going to be what it's like when AI takes
That's 100%
over.
What
we're all
be like.
In the dark and you're all waving. We're here.
You're not being productive enough.
Like who? Like Horton hears a who. We're all on the bottom. It's like, we're here. We're here. Turn the lights on. Yeah. AI's like, they don't need lights. Like,
so good job chasing away the darkness.
Yeah, chasing away the darkness makes them feel good inside. And like, I remember that as a kid. I remember going to the basement. Like, we turn on all the lights in the basement because it didn't have a lot of light down there. With natural, you know, the windows are in those basements with the big window wells and stuff like that. Yeah. So we turn them all on. My mom would get all frustrated, but looking back, I'm like, that made me feel good.
We were just chasing away the darkness.
Yeah. And the kilowatt charges in Utah are ridiculously low. You know how much they are?
A lot less.
Dude, it's like 10 cents.
I don't know. What
are
we paying?
That's the prime rate. What do we pay?
Oh, we're paying 30 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. We're like, if you have.
I remember this. I remember living in Utah and worrying about the electric bill when I had the electricity going in the summertime when it's super hot. And then finally, like, doing the math and realizing that the swing between me getting the AC that I wanted and not wanted was like $35. I'm like, I could pay $35 extra to have a nice, comfortable house. You know what I mean? But I was raised in SoCal where I just knew that swing was going to ruin my family financially. And it took me a while to just get comfortable with that. I can just use electricity if I want.
Well, I'm kind of still that way. I mean, my utility bills are kind of on automatic, so I kind of like glance at them. once in a while. And my problem is that my like my electric bill goes wildly different.
Yeah.
It's not, it goes from like zero or 34, like $34 negative because I have solar.
This was a temperate year, actually. It wasn't super hot in the summer, so my AC bill never got crazy. And so far, it's been a mild winter, and so my heat bill hasn't gone crazy. It's kind of fun.
It is kind of fun. It has not been that bad, yeah. It's a bright light in the state of California. Temperate.
I just turn on.
It wasn't too hot. It wasn't too low. So I turn on a lot of lights to chase the darkness away.
To chase away the darkness.
Yeah. Hey, Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
I thought of you Christmas Eve.
Oh, yeah?
And then Christmas Day while we were doing all our festivities. We were going to invite you over at the last second and say, hey, come over for dessert. But then we're like, they probably are busy. So.
Oh, well, all right. Now you know.
Yeah. But then I thought, wait, it's Christmas Day. You don't do anything Christmas Day.
So we did this Christmas Day.
What?
We had some friends over from church who we discovered had, you know, needed a place to go.
Right.
And then we went down to visit my folks.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, it was good. We had a great time.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, by the way, strangely, like I was talking to my brother. We had to drive down to Orange County yesterday, and he was telling me, he's like, he was talking about our philosophical discussion.
Oh, really?
And he's like, yeah. And he was all into it. And I'm like, what?
He was into it?
Yeah. He was like, yeah, old people, you know, it makes me like what Randy said was like really poignant. And I'm like, wait.
Which part? Which part?
Okay, so.
The part about how it's easy to assume doom when you're old? Or wait, which or the allostasis part?
The allostasis part.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like all into it. And he goes, that's really interesting. He's like, because, you know, when you look at people when they get older and it's like they're living a lot of their life in the past, like, you know, the happy moments.
Yeah,
you know.
Instead of being in a constant state of reinventing oneself, as my dad has counseled.
Right.
They're just like, oh, before it was better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, my parents are great examples of doing that. They really are.
Well, it's inspiring.
My mom has a funny way of going about it, actually. It's not funny. That makes it sound weird. My mom's way of doing that is she's constantly building something. So, like, when we go home, like recently was, well, semi-recently, it was, I'm tired of fiddling with the blinds in this room. And she had people put in like automated blinds. So you push a button, and these little electric blinds go.
Yeah, those are cool.
She put them and she liked them. So then she put them in another room. So she's got automated blinds in a couple rooms in the house. But she's reinventing the house. You know what I mean? That's the thing she does.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I love that stuff. Do you know what the one I really have always wanted? Have you ever seen the windows that you push a button and it like goes from, you know, clear to, is it opaque?
To cloudy.
Yeah.
The semi-translucent light comes in. But
yeah.
Not.
And it's like a chemical reaction in between the panes of glass.
I actually investigated that kind of glass. I actually have a patent at Disney for that.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh. What I mean is, when we were doing a VR headset or AR headset, AR headset lets you look through glass and see the world around you.
Right.
I realized that structurally, this is the same as a VR headset, except that you can see, right?
Right.
And it'd be cool if we had a toggle where we use that I think it's called electrostatic glass or something like that, where if you could flip a switch and have it go from translucent to opaque, and then you could use it for VR. And we filed that patent. And my name's on it.
Well, you should go after Apple.
I should go after Apple.
Yeah. Did you see what happened to Apple?
The watch?
Yeah.
Tell us.
They had, okay, so there's a Watch 9 and an Ultra 2.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are the two newest of their Apple watches.
Yeah.
And they are both, a judge found that, they were sued by a company.
Yeah.
And the company said, infringed on our patent.
Yeah.
And the judge says, yeah, you did. And you have to stop selling those effective immediately.
Yeah.
So the Ultra 2 and the Watch 9 is no longer available.
Oh, it was no longer available. Then 2 days ago, another judge stayed the ruling and they are available as of today.
Ooh. Well, that's too bad because part of me says that if they did infringe on a patent, by the way, the patent is related to the light that checks your pulse ox and your pulse.
Yeah.
And if they have violated a patent, and the person holding the patent, if it is not stayed, then it kind of puts a lot of pressure on Apple to settle.
It does. I have a real mixed feeling about the way patents are done in the United States, because I'm a big fan of owning intellectual property. I think that's a good idea. But they've changed the rules so that you're incentivized just to file every big idea you have without putting any work against it, so that you can do this kind of crap to Apple. So in the end, it's going to actually inhibit. So innovation. I say this because that's why Disney files a bunch of patents. Disney files patents not to go out and shake people down for money, but so that when people try and shake them down for money, they can turn around with their own patents and shake the other people down. It's called lawfare.
Right.
Like they own a stable of intellectual property, so that anyone that comes after them, they can turn around and be like, you can't even make a smartwatch. We own the smartwatch patent. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
That's what actually one of the big patents is that the 3Com owned was the integration of the people that used to make the Palm Pilot.
Right.
It was the integration of a phone and a smart device. So when they started getting pretty grabby on some of their innovations looked a lot like iPhone's innovations.
Right.
And Apple was getting noisy about it. They were like, do you guys want to keep making smartphones? And that was that. Because they own because 3Con owned the IP, like owns the patent for a smartphone.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that wild?
That is kind
so
of
so it's
wild.
Weird because IP is important, but it's also like progress in humanity is important. So it's you kind of want people to get what they deserve, but you also want the market to get what it deserves. It's weird. You know what I mean? Because what if you, William, owned the patent for a smartphone, but you had no means to make a smartphone? You know what I mean? Like, and then, so there's, do no smartphones ever get made? Like, that's weird, right?
But when Apple goes and they file their patent, isn't there supposed to be like a check? Like, oh, wait, this is already kind of filed.
Yeah, and technically then they're supposed to go license it. And if things worked well, that would be an efficient and honest and reasonable system. And it's not. Instead, what happens is people check, they figure out what they're violating. They try and guess whether or not that person's going to sue them. And then they just go make it.
and then wait for the lawsuit. And then license it.
Right.
Or fight them because they have deep pockets.
In narrow and specific cases, like the oxygen sensor, for example, in the narrow and specific case that these guys have a special sensor and they're making that sensor, like they'll go license it from a real company that's doing real stuff. They'll go license that technology. But like maybe oxygen sensor guy, I'm sure this is the case. Oxygen sensor guy has 85% of what they're looking for, but the other 15% they had to invent. And they're like, does that 15% differentiate us enough that we no longer have to pay that guy? And they're like, we think so. And then they go make it. And now they get sued. That's how it goes. Do you know what I'm saying?
That is interesting. It's a little sad because it squashes I can see both sides of this.
I can see both sides of it. Yeah. That's the thing. Is like, I actually believe that if I invented this killer thing, I should get credit. And like, on the other hand, like companies need to make their stuff. Can you facilitate that or not? You know what I mean?
Well, I have a personal example. Do you know what the radar altimeter is?
No.
It's the thing that tells an airplane how far off the ground it is. But it's kind of... It's not obsolete technology. It's just kind of older technology. Now they use GPS.
GPS, right.
But they still have a radar altimeter as a backup. So basically it sends a ping down to the floor of the Earth, right? And it bounces back, comes back. There's a timing, and they're like, oh, now we know how far off the ground we are. So my grandfather actually invented that. Nice. However, his PhD student, who this happens a lot, right? They work on the same work that you're working on. So they're building off of your work, right?
Right.
So my grandfather invented this. The graduate student saw it. He left the school at some point and then went and worked for a corporation who then patented it.
Yeah.
So his invention through academia, right, ends up to be patented by a corporation. And that's kind of how it is. Now, my grandfather never cared because he was an academic through and through. He wanted to teach and better the world with education. He didn't care about money; wasn't a thing to him. But it was kind of interesting. So if you go to like Wikipedia, I actually have a battle on Wikipedia, like who invented it, and I have all these sources that show my grandfather did it. So I'm always changing it from the guy that patented it with blah 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 because there's a whole line like, no, this is the guy who invented it, they patented it. There's two different things here, so they'll change it and then I change it and goes back and forth.
Yeah, man. Look, I keep saying that I have my name on patents. That might make you believe that that's good news for me. But no, Disney owns those patents because I worked for Disney when I invented that. So, like, my name's on there as just a simple back pat high five. I don't get a nickel.
Yeah, when you work for a corporation, they like to take all that. Well, I mean, I have a patent, right? I work with a friend of ours.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Patent pending, I think.
Yeah, it's a pending, yeah.
But yeah, all my stuff's pending, too.
It's super expensive.
Yeah.
To go to the next level.
Yeah.
But even going to, as a normal person like me, like a corporation like Disney, no big deal. But to file a patent pending, like to get the, you know, patent pending trademark with Thingy Bobber, right?
Yeah.
That costs like $5,000-$6,000.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Did you know you also know a patent attorney?
I do. I know a couple, but I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway. Strange world.
Yeah,
patents are a strange world. Oh, that's an interesting one. Anyway, hey, I have a question for you. I had another epiphany.
Yes.
I am working on a deal with a very large corporation, and the other side of the deal is also a very large corporation. And the one side that I represent,
yeah,
right, their large corporation is centered around real estate.
Great.
So they're like an $8 billion company. It's pretty big,
yeah,
right? But real estate
is 8,000 millions for those of you paying attention.
Yeah. And so and they're out of Houston, and a lot of times with these big corporations you have like one guy you're dealing with, but he's really not the decision maker, he's kind of the messenger back and forth.
Right. Yeah.
And so then you know, then a committee makes a decision, then the message guy comes back and says, "We made a decision, here's what we're going to do."
Yeah.
But in the $8 billion corporation, they're tooled towards real estate because they know that land is a very big part of what they do.
Okay.
The other corporation who is involved is a $30 billion corporation, but their number one business is not at all real estate.
Okay.
So here's my epiphany, and I wanted to ask you about it because I know you worked for some large corporations.
Yeah.
I find that working with the really large corporation that has no experience, their main business is not real estate, right?
Yes.
So it's just kind of a side note. So here's how it works. They have the track of executives that are running the business.
Yeah.
When they have a land deal or some kind of real estate deal that they need, they engage the real estate arm
of their company,
which is a parallel track. It's not a single track, right?
That's correct.
So now they're just kind of crossing at a moment.
Yes.
But the executives, not knowing real estate, defer to the real estate.
100%.
So the problem with the real estate is they don't make the decision. The executive makes the decision. So they become a army of advisors.
Yep.
That are advising kind of like a lawyer would on risk.
Right.
But in a really large corporation, the executives that need to make the decision don't want to make the decision because it puts their position at risk.
Yeah, they don't want to. Yes. So what's your question? So to validate what you're saying, every executive has a domain that they care about, that they want to save all their chips to care about their thing. So they can every risk they take is they want to be a risk that advances the interests that they have. They don't want to spend any risk on stuff that doesn't get them what they want.
Which makes this even worse.
Yep. 100%.
Because this deal is now 4 years old. We went into contract prior to COVID. And then the city lost the applications. There was all this problem because of COVID.
Okay.
And then they got it redone. What would happen is that the really large corporation was buying from the smaller corporation, and when they're buying from but there were certain things the smaller corporation had to finish and fix before they could do it.
Right.
And the city was involved. Okay. So that's the setup. Took 4 years. They're finally done. They go back to the really large corporations. We did everything you asked for. We want to finish the execution of the contract.
Yeah.
And that at that point, it's super academic, right? They just sign the dotted line. Switch happens. There's actually no money transferring because they're just switching pieces of property.
Okay.
And that's the end of it. Problem. All the executives that have put the deal together are gone from the really large corporation.
Yep.
And all the new ones they didn't champion the deal. They need it, but they don't want to put their They don't want to risk anything.
It's not my problem.
So you have the real estate arm thinking that they're the smartest real estate people in the world, which really they're not. They're just risk advisors.
Yeah.
And they're telling the risk advising, like, hey, wait a minute, you need to do blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the point is it's completely paralyzing to the deal.
Yeah.
And you've got no one willing to pick up the ball.
Yeah.
They're all staring at a fumble, thinking.
Yeah. No, this is where the real estate team needs to show some mettle and be like, hey, we have an obligation here that we made that we need to see through, that they need to carry it. But those guys, they don't get a nickel more.
Yeah.
They don't get paid a nickel more, whether or not the deal goes through or not. And they're reminded on a regular basis that their interest is they literally get paid to not screw things up instead of to advance things.
And then they try to negotiate through lawyers. The problem is that lawyers don't make real estate deals.
Whole job, they get paid literally by the hour.
Correct.
And so the more hours they get to talk,
correct,
the better.
Correct. So the small corporation, they use their lawyers for contracts and assassins.
Right?
Yeah. And then the big corporation, they use it for contracts, advising.
No, man, I'm negotiating.
Look,
I made a big but here's, that's the bad news. What you described is the bad news. Here's the good news.
I don't know how.
It's actually not good news.
I don't know how to make the deal work. I really don't.
Here's the parallel news. What you're describing isn't just confined to real estate. It's actually everything that happens at large corporations.
And that was my epiphany. My epiphany was, as I talked to the five new people involved, right? Two executives.
Yep.
And then three real estate people.
Yep.
And in talking to each one of them, I realized there's not a single person here looking at how to make this deal work.
Yep. So I can do a little corporate, what I would do in a company. If I was trying to make this thing go forward, is I would call a meeting where everybody is in the room together.
Yeah, I've tried that.
And then anyway.
Well, the large corporation looks at me as an idiot. I'm just a real estate guy in the middle, and so they don't see me as trying to get the deal done. They see me as trying to get a commission. And I'm like, wait a minute, my superpower is to bridge gaps. I'm incredibly good at it.
Yeah.
And putting people, the right people, in the room. And I told the really large corporation, I need a decision maker in the room to put with the decision maker of the other team so that you can walk away with agreement, tell your lawyers what to do with the paperwork.
That's right.
We cannot sit
you
there
can't
and
have
say-
the lawyers can't be making decisions, man.
Correct.
I've been stunned at how rarely they're just not wired that way. They're no, we're wired to just talk about problems and someone else has to make the calls.
No, there really are real estate dunces. And the fact that there's any way that they make money is just like flabbergasted.
Well, because they don't have the paradigm you have. Your paradigm is there is chaos. Let's line it up in a row and then let's get a deal.
Like, right.
They don't think that way.
No.
They're like, there's
I have a career.
There's potential chaos.
Yeah.
There's even more chaos.
They don't even look
that
at that. They're literally looking at their career. Why would I make a decision that potentially makes my career a problem or potentially makes someone else, there's so much politics floating around. That I actually know personally the boss of the boss on the executive side.
Yeah.
Right? He literally told me I'm moonwalking out of the deal. And I could see why. Because he doesn't want to put his name on something that's going to turn out bad, right? Whereas me as an executive, right, in my own company, I look at it as an opportunity to solve a problem and get it fixed. He looks at it as an opportunity of, wait a minute, I need to let these lower guys kind of figure this out. Because if I step in, they're just going to blame it on me.
That's right.
And I'm stepping on their domain turf. It is a weird thing.
So similarly, I had this product that we made at Disney that I was super duper proud of. And honestly, with any sense at all, Disney could have turned around, even if they wanted out of the business, and they could have sold this product for 50 to 100 million bucks to any one of a number of big people, right? But we had an executive champion. The executive champion got it through over and over and over again, groups of people. And then we launched the product. It got off to a pretty good start. And then the executive champion like left the company 2 weeks later. And 2 weeks after that, the company announced they're just shutting the product down. Instead of selling it for $100 million, they're just like, yeah, we're shutting it down. But it was all those things. It was like, no one knows how to run this thing. No one knows what the vision is of it. Like, the champion of it left. And I don't, like, I can pick this up and try and make good on all the dreams and promises that were made. But I don't care about this. I care about other stuff.
Okay, so then...
And then they just let this investment go, and that's that.
Then enters the dreaded HR.
That's right.
Right? Because the truth is that they've gone down the line. They're like, okay, here's this guy. Who's the guy underneath him? Is he competent enough to step in his place and make this winner for us, right? So if they had gone down the ladder,
No, you're assuming that they gave it that much thought. They did not. They did not.
So what do? They burn $100 million in the furnace.
Yeah.
So the problem is who does that? It's the dreaded HR. Why? Because they come in and they say, you can't just look down the ladder. Because when you look down the ladder, that person has to look a certain way nowadays.
Yeah.
And if that person doesn't look a certain way, then they're not in any way going to say, hey, well, that guy, right, or that girl, or whatever, that person can actually champion this deal and make a win for us. Yeah. And so what do? They just say, well, it's too much trouble to find the new guy to pull this along, so let's just burn $150 million. Which brings me to my next subject.
Yes.
Claudine Gay.
Okay.
President of Harvard. Yes. We have a little bet, side bet. We need to put it on air.
Yeah.
I am okay, so she's a president of Harvard, just to bring you up to speed. She got in a lot of trouble because she went in front of Congress and gave a really, really wishy-washy idea of like what is anti-Semitism and what they allow on campus at Harvard as a private institution. So then becomes the knives come out on the conservative side to try to get rid of her, right? The knives did succeed in three of these presidents who were up there, did succeed in getting rid of the UPenn one president.
Yeah, they did.
However, Claudine Gay.
By the way, there's like the MIT lady's just skating. I don't know how she's just hiding out.
I think she didn't say as much.
Okay. Anyway, go ahead.
So Claudine Gay is the first black president of Harvard. She's not the first female president of Harvard. She's the first black president of Harvard. So the speculation is that being of a minority a protected class, it's protecting her, right?
Well, that's what people on the right are saying.
Right. So the Harvard Corporation board came out and said, we're 100% with her. The teachers at Harvard said, we're 100% with her. Now what's coming out is she has... plagiarized based on Harvard's own rules, plagiarized in a couple of her papers. And then even then they're like, yeah, but that was just kind of like incidental, you know, no big deal. So they did citation corrections in her paper.
Right, improperly citing.
Now they're finding even more plagiarism. Now, there's a couple of interesting parts of this. One, her academic publishing prowess is really low for someone of her stature. Like, she has not published a lot.
Yeah, but you're saying that based on people you've read. It's not like you and I could read her stuff and be like, hey guys, this isn't enough stuff.
No, like, no, I know. So I know.
This is based on the analysis that you and I've read, you're saying that.
Partially, but I've seen it on both sides. Like, she doesn't have a ton of papers. Like, and even the left, right, are starting to say, wait a minute, how did she get to where she's at without publishing? Here's why
I'm getting you can hear me like huffing and puffing over here. I think academia is lost. I think it's lost. So you want me to sit around and talk about whether she's published enough, bro? Academia is lost.
Okay, so we can let that go. I don't need to. That's not part of the.
She hasn't published that much, right? And she has plagiarized
a lot.
No, but those examples of plagiarism were not found by the academics.
Correct.
They were found by a conservative firebrand who wanted to show that this lady was probably incompetent.
Correct.
And is successfully doing so.
Correct.
Okay.
So now you and I side bet that is how long before she leaves?
Yes.
What was your prediction?
My prediction was that she was going to wait a year or two and then say, oh, I need to spend more time with my family.
Okay, so that's a factor of double. So you gotta whittle it down. So you're gonna split the baby and say within a year and a half, over a year and a half. It's an over under.
A year from now.
You said a year or two from now. That's like double.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, either way, it looks like I'm losing. So, I mean, I predict that she will still be president of Harvard in December of next year. And then after that...
Okay, so you're going to go to a year.
After December of next year, sometime after December of next year.
Okay, which gets her past the elections.
December 2024.
Which I don't know how she
has. Gets her past the elections, based solely on the fact that I think that the media doesn't want to give this conservative guy a scalp.
Okay, so mine is...
And based on the fact that she's betting, and I bet she's right, that the board won't have the guts to fire the first black woman president of Harvard just outright. I bet they don't have the guts to do it.
If that's what it looks like, it may be... I mean, we have seen some sources say that it was inside information that she's lawyered up and threatening to do that. I don't know if that's true. I haven't been able to verify.
That's what the board wants. That the board wants her to resign.
Correct.
But they don't want to fire her.
Correct.
They just don't.
Correct.
And she knows that. And so then the question is, what would make her resign? And then I'm sure a truckload of money would.
Yeah, it's going to be a truckload of money.
It has to be a truckload of money because she's not just resigning. She's resigning for plagiarism, which means that she can't just go get hired by some other university.
Correct.
So this could be her last job.
Correct.
Right? If it's her last job, it's got to be a truckload of money.
Yeah. She's going to go into political activism.
But if it's her, like, if she's paying attention at all, and we said this a couple of years ago on our pod, but if she's paying attention at all, if we've learned any lesson from Hillary Clinton and from Donald Trump, it is don't quit. There's no incentive for you to quit. You're like, oh, but what about the shame and disgrace? Well, turns out shame and disgrace will blow over with time. Don't quit.
Yeah, I don't think she'll quit. I think that, like,
if you would quit out of shame, the Clintons would have quit 100 times. And Trump would have quit after that tape came out during his last election.
Yep.
And if you don't quit, you get to be president.
Yep.
Like, if I were her, I don't quit.
Yep. I don't think she quits.
Although a lot of money in retirement could sound pretty
good. Well, but that's what I'm saying. I think that there'll be a settlement. There's going to be money. It's going to be money because they can't. You're right. I don't think they can fire her. And I don't think that she's going to quit. And so at the end of the day, it's going to be a truckload of money.
If I'm her, I don't quit before the next presidential election because why?
Well, I don't see how the presidential election like kind of really mashes into this at all.
It's not a direct line, but just the idea that anyone on the right could claim any scalps on the left before the election is bad.
So I think the next step is going to be there are going to be lawsuits, and the lawsuits against Harvard and against her for the plagiarism, and they're going to have losses because of citations that weren't given to the proper people. And those citations are going to have damages, and the damages are going to be huge. So they're going to come after. I think that that's the next step.
Yeah, that doesn't happen in a year. So by that logic, I win.
My prediction is less than a year. And the truth is,
your prediction was months or weeks.
Oh yeah, no, I think she has months. So especially because
after William said that, there was an article about there was like the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Yeah.
And now the Atlantic and somebody else have all done op-eds saying she has to go.
Yep.
And those are kind of the four horsemen of the leftist church.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So William's looking like his bet's looking pretty good.
Yeah, it's looking good.
But again, there's no incentive for her to quit.
No, but the buttload of money. The Harvard Endowment is the largest endowment in any school. Is that the Harvard Endowment is larger than most like third world economies. I mean, it's humongous. Yeah. So them paying her $10 million is nothing. They could pay her $100 million and make it up in donations in a month. It's just not something that is a big deal to them. So yeah. I think that you're going to find she
all right,
gets paid
so we'll
out.
See, friends. So we'll see. Will she in December 2024 still be working at Harvard? Or will she resign and spend more time with her "quote unquote" family in the next few months?
Yeah, no, she's going to end up at the president of a company with a boatload of money.
Oh yeah, on some board, she'll be on a bunch of boards.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's funny.
She's going to walk out with a golden parachute.
All right.
What else? What do we got, my friend?
Oh, I got
shoot
a bunch of stuff. So
I know,
last
you shot
night,
me like 50 texts.
Last night, after months. Maybe years of leaning on us to play Dungeons and Dragons. The Davis family got together and was hosted a game of Dungeons and Dragons with Max as the dungeon master And it was a rollicking good time. So Max is right that we are suited for that game in like 6 out of 10 ways. And then there's these 4 out of 10 ways that all have to do with impatience. where we're not suited. So, you know, we had a great time. And that's that. Are you?
I'm just laughing because you said that it was a 4-hour game. I'm like, what the crap?
It was a 4-hour game. That's a short game, dude. It was like, it was a 4-hour game. And like at the 3-hour mark, I started getting nervous. And Max saw me get nervous. I felt bad because I wasted all this goodwill of playing with a straight face for 3 hours. But it's a good time. It's a good time. It was a rollicking good time. We had lots of laughs. It was a lot of fun. So I was assigned, you're each assigned a character with different strengths and weaknesses. And Max has been anguishing over dungeon mastering this game for weeks. And he's been writing the content and assigning us whatever roles. And I was assigned the role of a bard. And so one of my talents was to use music to give encouragement.
Right.
So every time one of my guys was rolling and fighting the bad guy, I could jump in with an encouraging song to give them a +6 power. And this is the fun of Dungeons and Dragons. As the bard, I had to actually sing something. And that's, it was a big family joke because I was just like, I was pulling out all the songs I've ever learned about. I had to do it like 30 times, you know what I mean? I got a lot of laughs for the singing along. They're like, "Dad was so well cast as a bard," and Max is like, "Right, I did it." And it's like he did do it.
Cast. Well, I mean, from what I understand, this is like a big storytelling event where you're kind of acting out the story.
What I found out about this game is that even though there's technically a thing you're trying to do, and there's a bunch of rules, and therefore it's a game. What it really is a framework for friends to make decisions together and to joke around together. It's when it's all over. If you've quote unquote won Dungeons and Dragons, but you haven't joked around and you haven't told stories and you don't have, remember that time when so-and-so said this, then you haven't done it right. And it turns out Max knows how to do it right. Cause we had all those things.
Well, so you and I agree on something. We're not really into games.
Yeah.
I don't particularly like sitting down and playing games. I don't mind card games that are kind of luck-based just because I don't have to think much and it's kind of like...
No, like the idea of a pastime with friends is good. Yeah, idea of having to learn a bunch of rules and keep them present in my mind while I'm trying to have a pastime with friends it infuriates me. I don't know.
Well, me too. And my kids do love games. And so I've always kind of felt a little guilt because they'll leave my house and go to my brother's house to play games.
Yeah. Well, my kids make fun of us. Make fun of me and Rachel for being too lazy to have board games as a family.
Yeah, it's tough for me. However, so my kids do love it, and so they get these games. Like, so my son got a bunch of these games, and there's a guy named Grandpa Beck. Have you heard of this guy?
No.
So there's a guy named Grandpa Beck, and he's invented all these games. One was like, one's called Cover Your Assets. One's another called, anyway, there's these games that he makes up, right?
Fun.
And lots
fun.
Of people.
Did you hear me say that? Like, fun. You can hear me suffering.
Right.
Fun.
Yeah, exactly. But turns out he puts his cell phone number on all the games.
That's funny.
And my daughter knows this, right? And so she said, "Hey, look, it's a cell phone." So my nephew says, "Oh, I'll text him." So he texts him and says, "Hey, thanks for your games. We really enjoy it." He texted back. I'm so glad you Merry Christmas. I'm so glad you enjoy the games, right? Blah, blah, blah. And he says, "Hey, by the way, here's a code. For the next time you buy a game, it'll give you a 10% discount." And this is me and my wife. And sends a picture. And he goes, "Next time you're playing the games with your friends, we'd love to see it. We'd love to send us a picture," right? So they're all excited. They're like, Grandpa Beck. That's what he calls himself. Grandpa Beck has texted him. So I don't know if it's automated. Even if it is,
who cares,
cool.
Man? That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. So these Grandpa Beck games, I wish I knew all the games, but my kids got like 4 or 5 of them. Grandpa Beck.
So
he's a member of our church too, by the way.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. So we're having more success than we historically have had at getting people gifts that we like at Christmas and getting gifts that we like. So I got a bunch of stuff that I liked. And I was able to surprise Rachel with a gift that she actually liked, which is cool.
Ooh.
Which
good
was...
Gift giving is a real talent. Wait, your wife is really into that.
She's really good at it. And so is Josh. So is Max. And me and Luke and Jonah, we're finding our way.
I stumble into a few every once in a while.
But I stumbled into one this year, which was, we used to have electric scooters during COVID. And we kept breaking them by going too fast, going down hills and ruining the brakes. And but now that our kids are grown and gone, and Rachel still kind of like laments that when we used to have electric scooters. So I got her an electric scooter. And she went out. She like took it out already. She's like, this is so great. She's so happy about it. So
that's awesome.
It's a good time.
Yeah. I always want to get that one called the one wheel.
Yeah.
You know, our friend Reese, he's got two of them.
He's got two of them.
And he's like, he's got us by 15 years, doesn't he, at least?
Yeah.
And he goes out and rides that thing.
Yeah, he does.
But I every time I look at it, I think to myself, I'm going to die.
It's actually sketchier. So I learned how to ride it. And it is rideable. I didn't learn how to ride it well and fast, but I learned how to ride it. So I was carefully riding it.
Right.
And I don't know. It looks really sturdy. But when you get on it, that wheel is kind of springy. I think it would be incredibly intoxicating to learn how to ride that well. But it's not super intuitive, man. Like, it's not. It's sketchy. That is a balance board. But,
yeah,
but
once it's one wheel and there's a balance platform in either side of it. Is there a gyro?
There's a gyro in there, yeah.
Okay, and then you lean forward and it goes forward. You lean back, it goes backwards.
And it goes stop.
Right, and then backwards. to stop, right? And that's what I meant, yeah. So, and to turn, you're kind of leaning like a snowboard.
Yeah, you lean like a snowboard. Anyway. I think to get good at it would be really a good feeling, but I learned to ride it enough to know that getting good at it. I mean, it would take a few hours and a couple days to get good at it. You know what I mean?
Did you say a few hours and a couple days? Yeah, it's a couple days plus 2 hours.
But that's a few hours. Well, no,
I mean, know what you mean.
What I mean is, okay, yeah, in an hour of screwing around,
you're not
I got to where I could ride it around slowly.
Got it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, if I was young and didn't believe that my bones were possible to break, you know, I probably would have been going a lot fast. And I'm tall with a high center of gravity. I'm carrying the weight of my stomach. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, I was going cautiously because I've broken lots of things. You know what I mean? So,
if I
was 17, no, I had no pads. I think I had a helmet on probably. But if I was 17. I probably would have been going fast after an hour, and I probably would have been good at it after a few hours.
See, that's the thing. I really, really love snowboarding, and it's like one of my favorite things, and you're a good snowboarder too. Like, we go out and snowboard, but the thing is that when you're going fast and you know, crash on a snowboard, it hurts, but you're on snow.
You're on snow. Look, I mean, that's why I like my electric skateboards, because it's just a little bit more of a known, like, I'm more comfortable on them.
That
you know what
sense.
I mean?
Yeah.
Plus, they go super fast.
They do. Well, I even when we you brought him over and I rode him, I was going pretty slow on those things. So
no, dude, you're doing great. All right. There's a funny thing happening in the Davis house, which I keep saying I'm gonna fix, but then I don't because I know it's gonna cost me a couple $100 and I'm cheap.
Right.
But last year, our heater, every time our heater starts up, every time, so every couple hours, it makes a large, super high pitched humming noise.
Interesting. Is there a bearing thing or a
so
belt?
I don't know if it's a bearing thing or if it's a belt thing. Or I can't figure out what else it is. But either way, every time it happens, I'm like, I got to fix that. But my kids just roast me about it incessantly because it's getting loud. It's really loud. Like, you can. So Lucas was across the street and down the street and he could hear it.
Oh, no.
If you're in the garage, which is where the heater is, you can super hear it. Anyway, it's kind of funny. So that's going on in the Davis house.
No, that's not like, I'm literally feeling stress for you right now.
Oh, are you?
Oh, for sure. Because I know what's going in the back of your head, right? You're trying to say, this is going to be just a little thing. It's going to be $200.
I got to get to it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but the real fear is, if you bring someone professional out and look at it, that it's really a... $10,000
problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, I don't want to know about a $10,000 problem right now. I want to, you know.
Yeah, we got a squeaky heater in the house.
We have one. So we have one. Our heater does, or our air conditioner does the same thing, where it blows until it gets to the right temperature, and then it shuts off. And then for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 seconds, it go off for a couple seconds, and then it goes back on.
Oh.
And I'm like, this is weird. But because of our building, right, I have a lot of HVAC people I can call. So I call the HVAC guy, and he's like, oh, it's called purging. It's just trying to blow the heat out of it.
Yeah.
So that you can, you know, so it won't burn up the motors or something. But, yeah, I had a similar thing happen. Like, the whole – the ours are zoned in our house. Like, yeah. And it wasn't working right. Like when it was just everything was blowing all the time. And so I finally called the HVAC guy. He came over and he's like, well, the board is burned out. And I'm like, oh, crap. And he's like, but good news, you have 3 ports on the board and you only need 2. So I just plugged it into the other one.
Oh.
I'm like, yes.
Nice.
So I just had to pay for the guy to come over. It wasn't too bad.
I have a good heater guy that I just found and he'll take care of me. He already took care of me. He came out and he's like, hey, this is what's going on with your heater. That's because there's a couple other ways that heater's acting weird. He's like, here's what you need to do. And I'm like, he's like, I can come back and do it. It's gonna
be so you're not stressed. You don't know that it's a big problem. It's a small problem.
I don't know.
Wait, I thought you said he came over.
No, he came over for the other thing and I forgot.
Oh, God.
Rachel, so he left and I'm like, I fixed the other thing. And Rachel's like, did you work on the squeak? And I'm like, I forgot to ask him.
I don't want to know about the squeak.
Anyway.
Let me tell you about the HVAC guy that came over one day and I'm like, this is not, my brain was fuzzed out. So he came over, he's a Korean guy.
Okay.
Did we tell you about this guy?
No.
He's a Korean guy, HVAC guy, right? So he comes over, he's Korean. And you know, when I see I expected either a normal American accent or maybe a Korean accent, right?
Yeah.
I have lots of Koreans that I associate with, so I was like, that's what I was expecting. I was expecting pure American or some kind of maybe Korean in the background.
Right.
And that's not what I got. This Korean is from Russia.
Oh.
Doesn't speak Korean at all and has a thick Russian accent. And it's like one of those times you're like, keep looking at him like it's buzzing my brain out. Like, what is going on? The dude's got, he is a Korean and and all the guys that work for him are like Boris, like they're Russian dudes, right? And they're like, they look like Russian dudes.
I saw a meme about that where there's some white kid that was raised in China it's like a 10-year-old kid, and they showed him on. It was on TikTok, and he was just speaking with a super thick Chinese accent, and it melts your brain a little bit.
Would you love to put that guy on one of these liberal college campuses? Like,
exactly.
Call him a racist. Like, what?
All right, so we're doing a little bit of medical tourism. I think I've bragged about this in the past.
Uh-oh, are you going wisdom teeth?
We're going to wisdom teeth.
Okay, you got to let me know who it is because my daughter has to get hers out too. Are you going to Vegas or are you going
all
the
way out?
Well,
simplywisdomteeth.com. That's who it is.
But they have ones up deeper into Utah, right?
I know they have them in St. George. I don't know how far into Utah they go.
I remember you did this before with your other son.
Yeah, because it saves me $1,500.
More than that.
Well, it was going to save me $2,000 under the old dental plan. The new dental plan.
Oh, you've got dental.
$1,500. Yeah.
We don't have dental coverage. So.
Oh, it's going to save you $4,000
yeah, exactly.
then. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say that. If you don't have dental coverage, it's going to save you $3,000.
Did I tell you what I did with Liam when we took his out?
Yes, you did. That was a story, man. That was one for the ages. Oh, man, that was one for the ages. But yeah, so in California, it costs $4,000 to get wisdom teeth out. And then if I go to Las Vegas, there's a place called Simply Wisdom Teeth, and they have super nice facilities, 100% professional. I'm telling you this so you aren't like, this guy's a hillbilly. And you go there, and they take x-rays, and then they put you in a room, and they give you they conk you out, and then they pull your wisdom tooth out, and you're out. It's all takes place in about an hour. And it costs, they've raised their prices from $899
to
$1,199, I think. So they raised it
That's a pretty decent increase.
By $300. And
it's still cheap, though.
And so, this is what I'm saying. Like, because here, if insurance pays half, they pay $2,000, and then you pay $2,000. And there, it's like all in. $1,100, and it's
so
like
the last time I actually
like, what did they mess it up? I'm like, dude, it's extracting wisdom teeth. Like, they can't like they if the teeth are out, they didn't mess it up. You know what I mean? Like, you did it.
Well, that's probably what they specialize in. The problem is all the ones here are oral surgeons, and they do a lot of other stuff too.
That's right.
Yeah.
Simplywisdomteeth.com. I'm a big fan. So we're driving out either tonight or tomorrow. I was going to tomorrow and do a one day thing like I'd normally done, but it occurred to me that it's like, I don't have anything going on tonight, and it's like $35 for a hotel in Vegas, so it'd probably be, maybe I'll split it up.
Wait, you can get a $35 hotel still?
Yeah, not with Rachel, but with me and Max, willing to stay in the 2.5-star whatever hotel. Yeah, no, if Rachel was there, we can't afford it.
How many times, by the way, have you gone to a place you thought was okay for your wife? Did you ever have to move?
Oh, I went to at least a couple where, no, it was a one-night deal, so we didn't move. But I was like, man, she's not happy.
So a couple of years ago, we went to Nashville. And when we got there, it was just me and my wife. We got there and we went to the hotel. And when we got in the hotel, and I'm trying not to react because I know this is not to her standard. Like,
yeah.
But the pictures made it look like and seem like. I looked at the reviews. It looked like it was. And I'm like, I felt so bad for her because she was really... I was stressed. This time of year is always stressful for me, right? Because deals are kind of already closed. So nothing's going to happen between now and the end of the year kind of thing, right? Money's always super tight, which is a bad time for money to be tight. And so I was stressed about it. And she goes, she was so good about it. And I'm like, I can't do this to her. She's not, we are there for like a special occasion and she needed to be relaxed, right? So I'm like, I can't do this to her. So I look up another hotel, and because it was COVID time, there was like a brand new Hilton high rise down the street.
It
was like, I'm looking at it, I'm like, wow, that's nice. And it was like, I don't know, $50 more or something like that. And I'm like, we'll just go there. So I walked down, I complained, they gave me my money back. We went down the street, went into this, and it was a gorgeous hotel. Beautiful.
Oh, wow. That's
empty, but gorgeous.
Yeah.
And so we're in there, and she's like, she looked at me, she goes, thank you so much. Like, it meant a lot to her because she would have toughed it out. But it was like, it was run down. Like, it was one of those ones where.
No, you can take the pictures right, but then you get there and you're like, oh, all these finishes are rough.
Yeah.
And everything, like.
Actually, have you ever had that? So I've noticed more in Airbnb. It's like that. Like you're like, oh, those pictures are fantastic, and you get there, and it's like, wow, there's a reason why the pictures look good, but nothing here. Like you can't sit on anything because if you do, it's gonna break.
Yeah,
that's why I feel.
Yeah.
Bad.
So when we were in, two out of three of our places that we stayed in Italy were cool. We're nice enough, but just barely, but nice enough, right?
Right.
But one out of the three, like the lobby was beautiful. And the breakfast was great, and the location was insane, but the room itself had Motel 6 vibes.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and that wasn't great. Like I was really glad that wasn't our first hotel, and that it wasn't our last hotel. It was because I was in Florence, and because we can bookend it with good experiences on either side. Do you know what I mean? But I was like, it was not great. You know. So anyway.
Ugh. Yeah. Hotels.
But what are you? I'm like, yeah. Hotels are crazy. Friends.
It's getting harder and harder to do good hotels.
This is our, we should have done a New Year's. We should have done a best of the year thing. But, you know, we've got one more minute. Do you have a best of the year?
Best of the year was this last, you know, end of October to now. Just having all my kids and able. This is the first time in 3 years that we've been together for Christmas. So, but I said that before. The first time in 3 years that when Liam came home from his mission, first time in 3 years we'd been together.
Yeah.
You know, so I've had a couple first time in 3 years. It has been a super intense October through December, but all family, super positive, great spiritual time with my family. So I would say that's definitely best. That's more than best of a year. That's like best of a long time. Like it's creeps into the top.
You know, I think I would say the same thing. Oh, you know what? I take it back. Our best of the year was when we took a family trip to Utah and went to see a comedy show and went to general conference together. That was the best of the year.
But was October.
It was October. And it was everyone was together and we had a really great time. And we did a bunch of things that we loved. We love church and we love comedy and we love togetherness and we love some good restaurants. And we did all three in a couple of days. So that was the best of the year.
There's something I never realized I carry around. I think we've talked about it before. It's that super. There's a bit of a heavy vibe when your kids aren't around, but all of a sudden it disappears when they're all in one place. Like you can kind of, you know, and it's, you know, you're excited they're out there, but when they come back and they're all there, it's just, there's a peacefulness about it that's neat. I love that.
Friends, it's been the Waystation Podcast, your source for life hacks, social commentary, and amazing stories. Happy New Year.
Amen. I'm William.
I'm Randy. Have a good day.